is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
To Central Asia, Tashkent, the capital of Uzbekistan, the most populous nation in all of Central Asia, exceeding 32, 33 million people and growing. Vast natural resources, still with the shadow of the Soviet era. And yet, a vote, Reuters reporting, Tashkent. Uzbekistan passed a package of constitutional amendments in referendum within these last hours. 90% of the vote, the Central Election Commission said on Monday, citing preliminary data. The reform resets President Shavkat Mirziyoyev and will allow him to run for two more seven-year terms when his current one ends in 2026. I welcome Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, who is in Tashkent, there to observe this election and to interpret what it means. Gregory was also blessed to be able to travel in Uzbekistan, part of the ancient civilization of city-states 3,000-4,000 years ago, centered around scientific, religious, and geopolitical advancements. Afghanistan was part of this mix. Kabul was a major capital of all of the area at one point, major city of the area, no capital. This wasn't an empire as we understand it. It was city-states. And one of the most magical of those city-states is Samarkand, which Gregory has also visited now and before. Gregory, we begin at the vote because 90% of the vote for extending the term of Mirziyoyev is striking to 2040. What does it mean, Gregory? And what is your analysis of how this fits into Central Asia? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, it was a critical vote for Central Asia, and particularly, obviously, for Azerbaijan, for Uzbekistan. The referendum was long in the making. The last 4 or 6 years have been years of incredible development since President Mirziyoyev took over and really transformed the country and began introducing a more transparent government, anti-corruption moves on a huge scale, not yet by any means completed, but really extensive. He introduced voting on a scale of accountability, which is rare in the world. And my organization, the International Strategic Studies Association, which publishes Defense and Foreign Affairs, was there for the last two elections and this referendum. So this is our third time monitoring this process. And we have not yet seen an election anywhere in the world which has been so cleanly organized and so transparently reliable in its voting results. So whilst the results of a 90% vote in favor of the constitutional changes might seem like something from the third world, it in fact really reflects the social contract which has begun to be developed between the people of Uzbekistan and this government of President Mirziyoyev. Uzbekistan and elsewhere in Central Asia has not seen a transformation of social relations like this since the invasion of the Russians in the late 19th century. And that was, of course, followed by the Sovietization of the Russian occupation. And then we saw the immediate post-Soviet period, which lasted until about a half a dozen years ago when President Mirziyoyev took office. So we're now seeing this opening of the country in a dramatic way. Now, The Constitution does a lot of things. I know that the first thing that AP and Reuters are going to look at is, it's about the president getting an extra shot at a couple of terms. In fact, this is really a popular mandate. At all the polling stations, we quizzed all of the opposition parties, the political parties, about their view on the referendum, and every one of them actually endorsed the entirety of this large-scale constitutional reform. And that included, of course, the giving President Mirziyoyev the chance to run for two more full terms. And any subsequent president would be restricted to those two terms as well. But the reality is that it also gives enormous powers back to the regions of Uzbekistan, with regional assemblies and parliaments elected by the regions, and the move to, instead of having governors of these regions appointed by the center, by Tashkent, they'll now be elected by the local people. There are many provisions in the constitution for healthcare, for and safety nets, social safety nets, and the like. It's a massive reform. One of the things which delayed the referendum was the initial proposal that the autonomous republic within Uzbekistan, a state called Qarakalpakstan, which is in the west of Uzbekistan and contains the remnants of the Aral Sea, for example, that autonomous state, it was suggested, should become part of Uzbekistan proper and give up its autonomous nature and its right to secede. And about a year ago, when this was suggested by Tashkent, the Qarakalpak people protested significantly, and their protest was heeded in Tashkent, and that was removed immediately from the referendum and from the new constitution. So they went through this process of getting grassroots input into the constitution, and once they had finalized it, they spent months going around the countryside, not just the government, but a lot of civil society organizations who are act as watchdogs over the government, and they went around educating the population on what this meant. Now, as of 6 p.m. on April 30th, the day of the polling, 2 hours before the end of voting, there was something like 81-82% of the people had voted, who registered voters had voted on this referendum change. The enthusiasm was enormous. People took it as a great holiday and a great advancement for Uzbekistan. Now, Uzbekistan is prospering enormously in recent years because of Mirziyoyev and this new and much more broadly based and transparent government, and has managed to stabilize much of Central Asia. It's built a block of states of the five former Soviet-controlled stands, as they called it, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Kazakhstan. So these are now a prospering series of countries, now because of Mirziyoyev, able to have free transit between all of the states. They're resolving old border issues and the like, and they're really prospering, except for the reality that they need to be able to trade with the outside world without going through Russia or the People's Republic of China. And this is their primary concern. So basically, Mirziyoyev has been pushing to stabilize relations with particularly Afghanistan so that they can send trains and trucks down through Afghanistan over to Pakistan and down to the Indian Ocean and trade with the rest of the world. And also, of course, they can, through a tenuous link, trade across the Caspian Sea through Azerbaijan and over to Turkey without going through the Soviet, through the Russian territory, and reach the West that way. But this is a block of countries determinedly pro-Western. They have decreased the use of Russian language throughout the five stands dramatically. English is now the second language after Uzbek in Uzbekistan. So this doesn't please Moscow at all, but Tashkent is very, very careful about how it deals with Moscow and Beijing, because it can't afford to offend either of them. But it is really working its way into the Western trading system, with major deals with the European Union, major investment programs with the United States and the like.
Gregory, you also traveled to Samarkand in this venture. I know you have before. And in a previous visit, my memory is you went to the Aral Sea and also to the agricultural base, and where Uzbekistan shines because of its quality of its cotton. All of those things are part of the prosperity, except for the Aral Sea. Did they have a plan for the Aral Sea, the dried up Aral Sea?
Yes, both Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan are working on this. The reason the Aral Sea dried up, of course, was because of the Stalinist move to dam the rivers going into the sea to divert the water for cotton production. The Uzbek government has given major incentives and privatized the cotton production on the basis that they achieve greater water efficiency so that they can produce the cotton and not use all the water, for example. And that's starting to happen. And there is a great revival of the lakes which were around and partly composed the Aral Sea. And in the north, in the Kazakh area, which has a major depression at the top of the old Aral Sea, the Kazakhs have managed to fill that. So that's a big start to the process. But the Aral Sea is in that area of Karakalpakstan, which is a pretty desert-like region in any event. But the cotton production is increasing, and it's now against the law to export raw cotton. All cotton has to be finished before exporting. So the cotton mills are working overtime to the extent that Uzbekistan is now importing raw cotton from other states so that they can keep the factories busy. Now, in the main agricultural area for food production, of course, is way over to the east in the up on the border with the Kyrgyz Republic, particularly, and that is absolutely flourishing, producing and exporting massive amounts of food, including first-rate wines and so on, which are now going all around the world from the Fergana Valley.
I'm speaking with Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. He's in Tashkent, the capital of Uzbekistan. And when we come back, I'm going to tell an anecdote about my days in Tashkent when I took a walk to the former state security offices not very far from downtown Tashkent. What influence does state security, the building itself, have on the thinking in the former Soviet republics? I'm John Batchelor.